जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदनंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यशोदनंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरावन चारी, यमुना तीरावन चारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदनंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरावन चारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी,
श्रीपाद परमहंस प्रभुचार्य श्रोत्र श्रेष्ठमतिजवैन ग्रेसि भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रीप्रभुपाद की जय। जय ओम विश्वपाद परमहंस प्रभुचार्य अष्टोदर्शत श्रीष्मतिजवैन ग्रेस भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती ठाकुर श्रीप्रभुपाद की जय। अनंतकोटि वैष्णववृंद की जय। नामाचार्य श्री हरिदास ठाकुर की जय। ग्रंथराश्रय भागवतम की जय। ऑल गुरु सिस्टमल डिवोटीज हरे कृष्ण, ऑल गुरु सिस्टमल डिवोटीज हरे कृष्ण, ऑल गुरु सिस्टमल डिवोटीज हरे कृष्ण, all gurus, all gurus, all gurus to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya, Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya, Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya, नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जायमुदीरये नष्टप्राये शबद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीरुत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्ठिकी। कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नंदनाय च नंदगोपकुमाराय गोविंदाय नमो नमः।
Hare Krishna. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 26, entitled King Puranjan Goes to the Forest to Hunt, verse number 6.
Tirtheshu pratidishteshu Raja Raja medhyan pashunvane Yavad artham alam lubdho हन्याद इति नियम्यते। तीर्थेषु प्रतिदृष्टेषु राजा मेध्यान् पशून् वने, यावद् अर्थम् अलम् लुब्धो हन्याद् इति नियम्यते। तीर्थेषु प्रतिदृष्टेषु राजा मेध्यान् पशून् वने, यावद् अर्थम् अलम् लुब्धो हन्याद् इति नियम्यते।
वर्ड टू वर्ड ट्रांसलेशंस, वर्ड टू वर्ड मीनिंग एंड ट्रांसलेशन बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। तीर्थेषु इन होली प्लेसेस, प्रतिदृष्टेषु अकॉर्डिंग टू द डायरेक्शन ऑफ द वेदास, राजा अ किंग मेध्यान फिट फॉर सैक्रिफाइस, पशुन एनिमल्स, वने इन द फॉरेस्ट, यावत सो मच एस, अर्थम रिक्वायर्ड, अलम नॉट मोर देन दैट, लुब्ध बीइंग ग्रीडी, हन्यात वन मे किल, इति दस नियम्यते, इट इज रेगुलेटेड। ट्रांसलेशन, इफ अ किंग इज टू अट्रैक्टेड टू ईटिंग फ्लैश, ही मे अकॉर्डिंग टू द डायरेक्शन ऑफ द रिवील्ड स्क्रिप्चर्स ऑन सैक्रिफिशियल परफॉर्मेंसेस गो टू द फॉरेस्ट एंड किल सम एनिमल्स दैट आर रिकमेंडेड फॉर किलिंग। वन इज नॉट अलाउड टू किल एनिमल्स अननेसेसरली और विदाउट रिस्ट्रिक्शंस। द वेदास रेगुलेट एनिमल किलिंग to stop the extravagance of foolish men influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance. Report. The question may be raised, why a living entity should be restricted in sense gratification? If a king, to learn how to kill, may go to the forest and kill animals, why should a living entity, who has been given senses, not be allowed unrestricted sense gratification? At the present moment, this argument is put forward even by the so-called swamis and yogis, who publicly say that because we have senses, we must satisfy them by sense gratification. These foolish swamis and yogis, however, do not know the injunctions of the shastras. Indeed, sometimes these rascals come out to defy the shastras. They even publicly announce that there should be no more shastras, no more books. Just come to me, they say, and I shall touch you, and you will become immediately spiritually advanced. Because demoniac people want to be cheated, so many cheaters are present to cheat them. At the present moment, in this age of Kali Yuga, the entire human society has become an assembly of cheaters and cheated. For this reason, the Vedic scriptures have given us the proper directions for sense gratification. Everyone is inclined in this age to eat meat and fish, drink liquor, and indulge in sex life. But according to the Vedic injunctions, sex is allowed only in marriage. Meat eating is allowed only when the animal is killed and offered before the goddess Kali. And intoxication is allowed only in a restricted way. In this verse, the word niyamyate indicates that all these things, namely animal killing, intoxication, and sex, should be regulated. Regulations are meant for human beings, not for animals. The traffic regulations on the street telling people to keep to the right or the left are meant for human beings, not for animals. If an animal violates such a law, he is never punished, but a human being is punished. The Vedas are not meant for the animals, but for the understanding of human society. A person who indiscriminately violates the rules and regulations given by the Vedas is liable to be punished. One should therefore not enjoy his senses according to his lusty desires, but should restrict himself according to the regulative principles given in the Vedas. If a king is allowed to hunt in a forest, it is not for his sense gratification. We cannot simply experiment in the art of killing. If a king, being afraid to meet rogues and thieves, kills poor animals and eats their flesh comfortably at home,
he must lose his position, because in this age kings have such demoniac propensities. Monarchy is abolished by the laws of nature in every country. People have become so degraded in this age that on the one hand they restrict polygamy, and on the other hand they hunt for women in so many ways. Many business concerns publicly advertise that topless girls are available in this club or in that shop. Thus, women have become instruments of sense enjoyment in modern society. The Vedas enjoin, however, that if a man has the propensity to enjoy more than one wife, as is sometimes the propensity for men in the higher social order, such as the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, and even sometimes the Shudras, he is allowed to marry more than one wife. Marriage means taking complete charge of a woman and living peacefully without debauchery. At the present moment, however, debauchery is unrestricted. Nonetheless, society makes a law that one should not marry more than one wife. This is typical of a demoniac society.
Hare Krishna. Umagyanati mirandhasya gyananjana shalakhaya chakshurunmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobhishtam sthapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam dadati shvapadantikam vandeham shri gurum shri utapadakamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha shri rupam sagrajatam sahagana raghunathanvitam tam sajivam sadvaitam savadutam parijana sahitam krishna chaitanya devam shri radha krishna padan sahagana lalita shri vishakhanvitamscha nama om vishnu padaya krishna prasthaya bhutale shrimate bhakti vedanta swami niti namine namaste saraswati deve gauravani pracharine nirvishesha shunyavadi paschatya deshatarine nama om vishnu padaya krishna prasthaya bhutale shrimate bhakti siddhanta saraswati niti namine vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhu bhayavacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha namo mahavadanyaya krishna prema pradayate krishnaya krishna chaitanya namine gauradvishe namaha panchatattvaatmakam krishnam bhaktarupa swarupakam bhaktavataram bhaktakhyam namami bhaktashaktikam he krishna karuna sindhu deenabandhu jagatpate gopesha gopika kanta radha kanta namostute tapta kanchana gaurangi radhe vrindavaneshwari prishabhanu sute devi pranamami hari priye jai shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadadhar shrivasadi gaura bhakta vrinda hare krishna 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 hare 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 rama 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 hare hare
Hare Krishna. It's a pretty long purport, reading from canto 4, chapter 26. King Purujan goes to the forest to hunt. Actually, in the beginning, the title of the chapter is also quite big. King Purujan goes to the forest to hunt and his queen becomes angry. And this is verse number 6. I'll read the translation again. If a king is too attracted to eating flesh, he may, according to the directions of the revealed scriptures on sacrificial performances, go to the forest and kill some animals that are recommended for killing. One is not allowed to kill animals unnecessarily or without restrictions. The Vedas regulate animal killing to stop the extravagance of foolish men influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance. Hare Krishna. So yesterday we had a nice presentation by His Grace Nam Prabhu. He helped us to remind about His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Maharaj and His Holiness Sridhar Swami Maharaj. He was quoting many of the points. So that was a very wonderful, inspirational presentation by Nam Prabhu yesterday. We'll continue with this. It's a new chapter, sort of, from Purunjan's section. In the previous chapter, we had seen We'll basically see a short recap. I'll make it as brief as possible in terms of time. And further, we'll discuss about guidelines for one who is too attracted to eating flesh. We'll discuss in brief about cheaters and cheated. And then we'll discuss a little elaborate on why not allow unrestricted sense gratification, and do Vedas sanction polygamy? The last two parts is the main theme of this purport, where the first one, why not allow unrestricted sense gratification, is more relevant, but we don't like to hear. And the other, do Vedas sanction polygamy, is not relevant, but then we may like to hear. So it's like that. So just a brief recap, because in the previous chapter, Puranjan, as Bhagavad Gita quotes, Dhyayato Vishayan Pumsa Sangasteshu Pajayate, he was initially curious how this girl is just roaming around in the forest alone without any protector. And he inquires about her, gets attached to her. And now in this particular chapter, we are seeing that attachment. Towards the end of the chapter, it was described that when the queen would sit, Puranjan would sit, the queen would get up, he would get up. Basically, he would imitate typically a henpecked husband. That is how he would behave. And now we are seeing suddenly that although he was so attached to her, one fine day, he gets sort of that Shamshan Vairagya he gets, and then he feels that, let me go to the forest to hunt. So that is the situation here. And Narada Muni, in this beautiful allegorical narration to Prachani Varishit, very brilliantly explains the position of a living entity and how he is entrapped in this material body. So in the first three verses of the purport, in this very chapter, very beautifully Srila Prabhupada gives the explanation of the allegory given by Narada Muni. So he says that Prachini Varishad was going to the forest to hunt. So this Srila Prabhupada describes as, this is symbolic of a living entity influenced by the mode of ignorance and wanting to enjoy different kinds of sense gratification, going to the forest to kill the animals. And then he says that he is wearing a golden armor, he's sitting on a chariot with five horses going towards the forest. So all these things are very beautifully explained, as this first three verses explain here. So taking up a great bow and arrow, which represents attachment and hatred, golden armor and dress represents the influence of the mode of passion, and then accompanied by 11 commanders represents the mind and senses. He sat on a chariot represents the body, driven by five swift horses represent the five senses, and he is going to the forest named Panchaprastha. So this forest represents the sense objects, five sense objects. And then Prabhupada explains how this five horses traveling swiftly to the forest represents how the living entity's senses are madly attracted towards sense objects. So that is how these horses are swiftly moving towards the forest named Panchaprastha. He took with him in that chariot two explosive arrows. These arrows represent two explosive arrows. These arrows represent ahankar. We may feel how it is two, because Prabhupada explains ahankar is, the attitude is aham and mama, ahankar. So that way they are two explosive arrows. The chariot itself was situated on two wheels. The two wheels represent sinful life and religious life. On the chariot were three flags, represents three modes of material nature. One rein, that is the ropes, that is mind. One chariot driver, which will be intelligence. One sitting place, that is the heart. And two poles to which the harness was fixed. This represents lamentation and illusion, in which the living entity is basically encaged, harnessing the poles. So that way, in this way, Narada Muni is giving a very beautiful allegorical story to explain to Prachani Parishad. And in this particular pastime, what we are seeing right now is Prabhupada is describing, he is going to the forest to hunt, and the purport explains about the ill effects of meat eating, and it also explains about why not allow unrestricted sense gratification. So although usually he was attached, this day he wanted to hunt. So eventually we'll see that That's how the king, that's how the queen becomes angry, that he has left me and gone to the forest. So in the previous verse, Prabhupada explains about the consequences of unrestricted animal killing. Very beautifully explains that they will be slaughtered like the animals. Those who have unrestricted animal killing in the slaughterhouses, they will be slaughtered like the animals. And every 5th or 10th year, there will be big wars or calamity. And enemies will keep them in concentration camps where they will be cruelly killed. So in this particular verse, in the translation itself, Prabhupada explains the guidelines for one who is too attracted to eating flesh. So one thing we have to understand is how Vedas are so accommodating. That is, there are people who want to eat and there are people who want to avoid eating. So naturally, avoid eating is a higher category, but still Vedas are all accommodating. So irrespective of how fallen or how conditioned the person is, Vedas tries to accommodate everyone. So in this case, it is mentioned about if one is interested in eating meat, in eating flesh, then the conditions are given that he has to follow the directions of the scriptures, he has to perform sacrifices, right? He has to go to the forest, he has to hunt the animals, and then there are animals which are recommended for killing. That means all animals are not recommended for killing. Only selective few are recommended for killing. In that, he has to, that is his limited choice that he has in order to kill. And at the same time, he is not allowed to kill even the animals which are recommended. He is not allowed to kill them unrestrictedly. Even then, there is certain restrictions in terms of how, in terms of certain guidelines that one has to follow. So, 2-3 further points which Prabhupada explains in the purport, which is what we'll be discussing on. So, Prabhupada mentions about cheaters and cheated. Because the common man does not want to follow any restrictions. And at the same time, when he wants to be religious, then he tries to seek out some easy path. Are there some spiritual gurus who can give me shelter while at the same time I need not follow any rules and regulations? So, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur usually quotes about this world is a cheater, world of cheaters and cheated. There are people who want to be cheated, and naturally there are cheaters who are arranged. So that's a proper match making where they get, both of them get satisfied in a very illusory way. So when, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, so people say that I don't want to follow any rules and regulations, restriction, no restrictions. And then there are bogus gurus who say that, yes, please come to me. I will touch you. And based on that touch, you will become spiritually enlightened. So the guru also is falsely claiming that he is going to enlighten or liberate. And the conditioned soul will remain in his conditioned state continuously without following. Because a sadhaka means discipline. Disciple means discipline. Without discipline, there cannot be any progress in spiritual life. So this is the foremost thing which has to be explained from the perspective of spiritual life. Further, the main theme of this purport, which is explained as, why not allow unrestricted sense gratification? This is what a conditioned soul wants to ask. Why not allow unrestricted sense gratification? What's wrong in it? So we'll try to discuss this. One is, it is, there is a limited capacity that we have to handle unlimited desires. It is just like if you have a vessel, if you have a can of which can contain 1 liter volume capacity, and our unlimited desires are like 5 liters or 10 liters, or no, unlimited means infinity, it can be anything. So while I have a can of 1 liter and we have unlimited desires, I want to pour 20 liters, 100 liters, it is just not feasible. It is just not able to accommodate it. So we have to basically understand there is a limitation in the capacity. Like if we see the modern restaurants, like for devotees, it's Govindas, or you know, if we go to Bangalore or somewhere, Sattvam or some restaurants, so they may claim unlimited food. So 56 items, unlimited food. Now when they claim that it's unlimited food, is it really unlimited? Yes, it is. Because a person can eat any amount that he wants. Now suppose I pay for it, whatever, 500,000, whatever I pay for it, and then I take a carrier with me. Will they allow? I say, no sir. Why? What's the problem with the carrier? No, you can eat unlimited, but you cannot carry unlimited. So I am saying that I want to take it for my friends. I have paid for it. I want it unlimited. Okay, then I say, okay, I not carry for others. I will myself eat later. No, sir. That is also not allowed. You eat as much as you want now. You may probably fast for 2 days and then go. that's our choice. But nevertheless, what is unlimited means whatever you can eat now at that moment. That is very clear. That's how that means they understand what is the limited capacity that each person has. With some few exceptions, probably like me, who may do paisa vasool. Otherwise, there are majority of the average people have a limited capacity. You take woman, naturally capacity gets a little lower. Then there are, to add to it, family means children also are there. Eat little, but payment is almost full only, right? So they understand there is an average out, it gets average. There are very few people, 30-40% may eat full capacity. And then the majority of the remaining people will be like normal, you know, alpa food, you know, what they can actually honor. So they understand how much can a person eat. Very limited. And that's how they claim unlimited. The word unlimited attracts. Wow, I can eat any amount. And I can eat whatever I want. But when we go there, we understand our limited capacity. Then we may say, okay, so what's wrong? And we may say, I have a limited capacity, but I still want to enjoy. Okay, I have limited. I have at least 1 liter is there. At least let me fill 1 liter in that can. Let me enjoy that. The point is, even if we try, ultimately this material world is so designed that it brings about suffering. Yahi samsparsha jab hoga. Dukha yonaya evate. Dukha yoni means it is a womb. It gives birth to suffering. That means the attempt to enjoy gives birth to suffering. That is how the material world is designed. So somebody may, like for example, when Sarva Bhattacharya invited Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course there's a long past time, he was like pestering him, please come and stay for 1 month. For 1 month, please come and honor prasadam every day at my house. Mahaprabhu said, no, that is too much for a sannyasi. Eventually it boiled down to 5 days. So he agrees to come to his house for 5 days. So when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes to his place, Sarva Bhattacharya feeds him very lovingly. And then his wife, Sathi Mata, she was also there, very lovingly they cook and offer prasadam to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, I am a sannyasi, I am a vairagi, renounced order, so I cannot. Initially he was very happy to see the plate, because he felt that this is offered to Krishna. Krishna has offered so much wonderful prasadam, so that's very nice. But when that plate was offered to him, Mahaprabhu says, I cannot eat so much. And then Sarva Bhattacharya says, I know as Jagannath how much you eat. I know as Giridhari, the lifter of Giri Govardhan Hill, how much you eat, how much capacity you have. So please don't make excuses and simply eat. So that was the loving relation that he had with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But in case of the conditioned souls, we have a very limited capacity. And even if we try, suppose somebody wants to eat 50 gulab jamuns, even if the attempt is there, maybe for a competition there can be there, but it is going to cause some disturbance. It will upset the stomach, and eventually, you know, person may take to vomiting or so many other aspects. So there are natural consequences that one may has to fear, that one may has to face. So yahi samsparsha jab hoga dukha yonaya evate adi antamanta kaunteya na teshu ramate buddha. That is why an intelligent person does not try to delve in such matters. And then we may say, I don't mind that also. I have limited capacity. Even if I try, I'll suffer. It's okay, let me enjoy. And then as many times people say that, I'll eat to the fullest extent, and then I'll take some churna, I'll do some adjustments. At least let me enjoy whatever is there. Later on I'll see what is to be done. So if we enjoy beyond our capacity, beyond the capacity of the senses lose taste. The senses become numb. In the modern world, people are used to enjoying gadgets. So gadgets offer gadgets offer overexcitement. People typically who play video games or any gadgets, typically, computers or whatever we play with, it offers too much overexcitement and it offers instant gratification. And because of that, a person will not be able to enjoy even the simple joys of life, which comes in relationships, which comes with dealing with people, which comes with observing nature or living with nature. Because when it comes to relationships, these are not instant. That is like, it's like you sow a seed, it takes time to fructify. It takes time to grow. And unfortunately, when we are used to instant gratification, relationships cannot offer instant gratification. It takes time. There is an investment and then it reaps certain results. So even if one does not mind the suffering that one undergoes, he still wants to enjoy. It is described that one will lose taste. Because the senses, when it is overexcited, when it is engaged beyond capacity, the senses lose taste or become numb. That means no reciprocation at all. For further, it's like a sponge which is put in the water. It is completely absorbs the water. Initially, when we press, even without pressing, there is water dripping. Afterwards, then when you press too much, little bit of more water starts dripping. And then finally, in spite of very hard press, there is no more water, there is no more juice. So ultimately it ends up as puna puna charvita charvananam. Like the chewing gum, when we initially there is probably some milliseconds, there is some taste based on the flavor. Later on it is just an exercise for the teeth. It just goes on continuously. So from the scriptural understanding, we have to make this principle that we have to understand this principle that ultimately we are not the owners of this body. We are caretakers. Just like how many devotees write in their books, in care of such and such das, whatever. So in care of. Similarly, this we are not the owners of this body. Rather, we are caretakers. It is provided to us, awarded to us. Depending on how we utilize it, that is how one will get the consequences of. So, Nirdeha Madhyam Sulabham Sudhurlabham. This body, although temporary, it is still a great vehicle in order to cross over this ocean of birth and death. So that's a very, very great benediction that we can achieve, although this body is so temporary. Although we are so conditioned, although we have so many conditioned desires, still, if we engage in Krishna consciousness little by little, tani sarvani samyamya yukta asita matparaha. That's why I said, that's why Bhagavad Gita gives the example of the tortoise, kurva anganiva. Like the tortoise, it knows when to withdraw and when to extend. When the limbs have to be extended, when the limbs have to be retracted. So this is what the scriptures are talking about. As Prabhupada mentioned in the purport, regulations are meant for human beings, not for animals. A very brilliant example Prabhupada gives. If the animal is crossing the road, even if there is a red signal, the traffic policeman is not going to punish the animal. But if a person, human being, is violating the traffic laws, then he will be punished. Similarly, if in the shops, you may see animals may sometimes put their mouth on the eatables directly. If an elephant is traveling by and there's a banana shop, so naturally the elephant has an attraction to put his trunk towards those bananas. But a human being, if he does, then that is not acceptable. So human being has to have some regulation. He has to see do I have money in the pocket. Then only he can take the further actions, further steps. So Prabhupada says regulations are meant for human beings and not for animals. That is why the word regulation means moderateness. Even 11th canto of Bhagavatam explains, just like a horse, the horse, there is a reins connected to the horse, and sometimes it has to be given little lenience and sometimes it has to be caught. That means when the horse, when the person is traveling in the chariot with the horse, there are times when we have put a brake, means pull the ropes, and the horse understands, yes, I have to stop now. And at other times you have to allow the rope to be a little loosened so that the horse is traveling. Whenever there is
Shri Radha Vrindavan Chitra Bhagavan ki jai, Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maiya ki jai, Shri Shri Gauranithaya Bhagavan ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai.
So at times it has to be caught, and at times it has to be let free, so that it knows, just like the tortoise. At times the limbs have to be extended outwards, and at times it has to be withdrawn within, as per the situations. And towards the last section, Srila Prabhupada talks about, do Vedas sanction polygamy? So this is probably a little controversial topic. Of course, as such, government does not allow that. But since there is a discussion in the purport, we'll try to discuss on this. So do Vedas allow polygamy? Very beautiful. Before Prabhupada begins about the topic of polygamy, he mentions a wonderful definition of marriage. Of course, there can be many definitions, but this definition which Prabhupada is giving is in context to what he is talking about in terms of marrying multiple people, polygamy. So he says, Prabhupada says, marriage means three aspects. He says, taking complete charge of a woman and living peacefully without debauchery. Three aspects: taking complete charge of a woman. Of course, the woman also has to allow to be taking charge, because that is how the nature is. Woman by nature seeks shelter. Man by nature wants to give shelter. So taking complete charge of a woman and living peacefully without debauchery. Three aspects which Prabhupada mentions. And then when we see what Prabhupada is talking about in terms of polygamy, it may make more sense. So he says, do Vedas sanction polygamy? First of all, polygamy means one person marrying many people. So one, maybe in today's time it can be a little more complex. Generally it is one man marrying many women. And exceptionally, there are one woman marrying many men. In the modern times, it will become more complex, which we don't need to discuss here. Right? So, in general, the one man marrying many women, that is the understanding of polygamy. So, the Vedas is very clearly mentioning, for whom is it? Who can be sanctioned? Man marrying many women. Who can be sanctioned? It very clearly mentions it is for the higher classes of, higher orders of society. Typically Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya is also included there, and sometimes Prabhupada says Shudra. As such, all four are included. But it is like, and sometimes Shudras. But otherwise, typically it is meant for higher classes, Brahmana, Kshatriyas, like that. Why? Why is it sanctioned for them? And then there Prabhupada mentions, it is if a man has a propensity to enjoy more than one wife. If a man has a propensity to enjoy more than one wife, then the immediate question will come is, that means if he wants more, he can marry more. Then that's why we have to go back, refer to the definition of marriage given by Prabhupada in this purport. So marriage means taking complete charge of the woman, living peacefully without debauchery. So, if this principle is practiced, you can marry 10 also, provided you take complete charge. That means what? It is not for enjoyment only. Or there are, like in the Middle East, you may find sometimes they live like slaves. It is not meant for that. Are we taking complete charge of the woman, living peacefully with 10 and without debauchery? That is how the conditions are put forth. So for whom it is? It is for the higher classes of men. For why it is sanctioned? Because man sometimes has a propensity to enjoy more than one wife. Is it logical from the population perspective? This is true from the Vedas. Is this logical? Usually it is. Because as per the census, generally the woman population is considered to be more. Typically it always be, It's around 51% of women and 49% of men. It is generally always the woman population is supposed to be, that's how somehow it is arranged. It's generally more. So is that logical? Yes. If there are more women and less men, and what to speak of so many others in the renounced order. So naturally, there are some women who will choose more men. That's how it is logical. And is it as per the propensity, natures? That is also, it is mentioned as yes. Because we will find sometimes, of course, this may not be we are not talking about a cultured people. Like, we may find sometimes a young, beautiful girl agrees to get married to a 60-year-old man. Is that possible? Possible. What will be the condition? Provided that 60-year-old man is a billionaire, multi-billionaire. So a young 20-year-old beautiful girl is agreeing to marry a 60-year-old man who is a multi-billionaire for obvious reasons. So there is a propensity. There is a propensity. And second, it is explained as, like, for example, it is described, like, Ravana had so many queens. Principal queen was Mandodari, but other than that, there were so many others. And most of them, of course, he had kidnapped them. He had forcibly got. But it is described there were some women who voluntarily came to Ravan and said, "We want to be with you." You may be surprised. Why is it so? There were some queens. It's not that they were ugly or something. They were well qualified. They voluntarily come to Ravan and say, "We want to be with you." It basically means sometimes as per the nature or propensity, sometimes they prefer the position more than the personality, more than the person as such. The position is more attractive. So in that way also, the natures or propensities, as per the natures or propensities, one may want to have, the woman by nature may want to have an elderly husband or a very old husband. That way. So in Shastras, examples are there for husband who has many wives. Typically you'll find Uttanapad, like if you take in a increasing order, Uttanapad is two wives, Suruchi and Suniti. And then if you take Dasharath Maharaj, 353. Typically three principal queens, but otherwise in general, overall, 353. If you take Krishna, 16,108 wives. If you take Chitraketu, millions of wives. So it's there. So in increasing order. And then what about men? What about women marrying many men? Is there examples? Draupadi is famous example. And in this very section, we'll find in the future Maresha, who gets married to the 10 Prachetas. Narada Muni is describing this allegory of Purunjan to Prachini Parishad. His 10 sons get married to one woman, Maresha. So that way examples are there, but at the same time we have to understand there is a duality in this material world which we cannot deny. So if we say the Vedas sanction polygamy, so if it is sanctioning, is there no side effects? Is there side effects? Yes, there will be side effects. We cannot avoid that. In fact, even when Nimai Pandit in his childhood pastimes, when he would go to the bank of the Ganges and he would be in a playful mood, and when the ladies would come there, the young ladies who would come there to worship Lord Shiva in order to get better good husbands, so that time Nimai Pandit would sit on the throne of Vishnu. He would ask all the offerings to be given to himself. He would say, "I am the master of the Ganga. I am the master of Ganges. You give all the offerings to me only." So the ladies would, young ladies would sometimes get disturbed and say, "Why are you talking like this?" And then they would not give the offerings to Nimai, and they would continue to perform their pujas. And at that time, Nimai would give them loving curses. Curses in a loving way. He would say that, "If you don't offer all these offerings to me, then you will get married to an old man having 4 co-wives." He would give curses, in a loving way. It was loving dealings with his devotees, basically. So but the point is there side effects? Definitely yes. So if somebody is marrying a husband who has 4 other co-wives, even if you talk about, even from a Ramayana perspective, when Kaushalya mentions that when I got married to Dasharath at that time I lost my father. When Dasharath got married to Kaikeyi, I lost my husband. What does that mean? That means just because Dasharath is getting married to Kaikeyi, who eventually becomes one of the favorite queens, that means the other queens get neglected. Was Suniti not neglected by Uttanapad? She claims that very, very openly. She mentions that somehow Suruchi is the more favorite. So while Vedas sanction polygamy, it does not mean we can avoid the side effects of it. In spite of the side effects, one is willing to go ahead. Of course, one can. Of course, there is not much scope for discussion, because as such, government does not allow. And which is why Prabhupada is telling, this is typical of a demoniac society. On one hand, you restrict polygamy. On the other hand, you hunt for women. That is considered demoniac. Which means, to end with this, which basically means, either you marry many, but then as per the definition of marriage, take complete charge of the woman, live peacefully without debauchery. That means marry many, or marry one and try to be happy and without debauchery. That's the same thing. So either it's like, you know, like Krishna. Krishna is marrying 16,108. He is providing palaces individually for all the queens. Otherwise, let us settle like Lord Ram, Ek Patni Vrata, who is marrying one, living peacefully without debauchery. But in between is what Srila Prabhupada is saying. This is typical of a demoniac society. That is, you restrict polygamy, but on the other hand, you hunt for women. So that is something which is not acceptable. Hare Krishna. So in short, we discussed today just a brief recap about Puranjan, the allegory, how he is entering into the forest to hunt, to kill the animals. And there Narad Muni explains the wonderful position of the living entity and how he is encaged in it. And then we discussed about guidelines of one who is too much attracted to eating flesh. We discussed about cheaters and cheated. And finally, towards the end, we discussed why not allow unrestricted sense gratification. So there are 4 points we discussed on that. We have limited capacity. Even if we try, we will still suffer. And eventually we will lose taste. And ultimately the scriptures talk about how we are not the owners of this body, rather caretakers of this body. And towards the end we discussed, do Vedas sanction polygamy? So as such, it is giving a proper definition of marriage, that is taking complete charge of a woman and living peacefully without debauchery. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Hare Krishna.